This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am here back behind the microphone at TAN Talk Radio Network Studio. Oh, I love it here. It is so wonderful to be back. And thank you, Big Ed, for keeping this place so germ-free for me. Okay. And today I am so happy to welcome back to the program somebody who I spend hours. You know, sometimes I get a book and I read it in a couple hours and because I'm a fast reader and it's over and it's done. But I never finish this guy's books because they are so good. I'm so happy to welcome Joe Yogurst back to Joy on Paper. Hi, Joe. Whoa, where is he? He's not on. Well, he should be on. I don't know where he is. I thought he was on. Well, they normally get him right on time. So anyway, I am going to wait for him. He's worth waiting for. He's fantastic. And at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to somebody, he was on not too long ago, John Bishop. And the wonderful thing about John Bishop is that he's come out with a series. This is, you know, writing is so wonderful. You never know what it will lead to. Now, John Bishop is a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon. And for years, of course, he always had it in the back of his mind he'd like to write a book, like so many people do. And of course, so many people don't do it. But John finally, you know, he retired from orthopedic surgery, which is a full-time job, and he started a series, and it's a wonderful series. It's called a Doc Brady Mystery Series, and I taped an interview with him, which I'm going to play at the bottom of the hour. And it's really, really a great series. I really enjoy his books. And so it just shows you what you can do. You can dream, as I say in the beginning of the program. This is a program not just for writers, but those who dream of writing. And so if you are dreaming of writing, you can start too. You might, you know, start after you retire. But meanwhile, you could be keeping notes, keeping a journal, and being prepared for the day when you'll have time to sit down and write your book. And actually, in this case, John has written two books in pretty rapid succession, and he's been on, twice now. So it's really exciting for him. And the thing about it is that he thought this through. He came out with characters that are memorable, and characters that I know that I will enjoy reading through many, many books. And he's already, I think, on his fourth book. And I expect that there's going to be 24 books at least in the future for him. And that's the exciting thing. And of course, in his case, I also think he's written a series that would be very, very nice on television. So, but you have to have quite a few books sort of under your belt before Hollywood starts thinking about you or taking you seriously. But it's fun, and I know that even if nothing else, he's just having fun. He's writing, and he's just filled with this joy that you get from seeing your words on paper. And of course, an audible book version, because the audible book versions are so much fun also. Just to know that, you know, you hear the words and you say, did I really write that? That sounds so good. You get such a kick out of it. I talked to one author, and she was listening to her book. And after a while, she forgot it was her book. And she said, you know, after a while, she said, I really wrote that. It's so interesting. So I thought that was so amusing that you get so enthralled with your own writing sometimes when you hear it read, of course, by a wonderful narrator. And there are wonderful narrators out there. And so you have this opportunity, once you write a book, to find a narrator that fits your style, fits your book, and just read along. This is a joy. Life is full of so many joys. You can do so many things. And all you have to do is try. You have to just get out there and try. If it's just starting a journal or writing a poem, which reminds me, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to have a poem for you because I want to start a feature on Joy on Paper where we have just little poems that get you thinking about things. And one of the things you can think about is our road trip. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Joe Yogurst. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Oh, well, I was telling people at the beginning of the hour, I was telling them that, you know, I read so many books and it's so much fun. And mostly I read, you know, in a few hours, I'm done with the book and that's it. With your books, I'm never done.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I go back.
There's more on the way. Don't worry.
Well, your books are wonderful. 100 drives, 5,000 ideas. 100 parks, 5,000 ideas. 50 states, 5,000 ideas. You've got a lot of ideas out there, Joe.
Yeah, it's kind of a lifetime of ideas, but I'm kind of I'm one of these people where trivia just sticks in my brain, and my family always thinks it's kind of incredible that I remember all of these obscure things, but don't remember where I put the car keys type of thing. So.
Well, you do have an amazing collection of trivia in these books, and that's what makes it so much fun. These are ideal gifts for people, even if they're not going to travel. They're traveling just by sitting down and reading your books because they're just so many delightful things that you write and all the different sections. You have all these little inserts, which I love, like pit stops and where to lay your head and scenic detours. And we have to just tell people that they will, you know, you pick it up, you read it once, and partly it's fun to find out the places that, like, I've been. Now, it's funny, I haven't been to as many American places because I lived in Europe for a long time. So I traveled Europe. And so for me, it's really an eye-opener of how many wonderful places there are to go.
And this is a great summer, a great fall to do it. For those who've had their long planned European vacation or South Pacific or Caribbean vacation canceled because of the pandemic. This is definitely a year to no longer put America on hold and to get out there and explore your own country. And that's very much what I'm doing this summer. I've already done one car camping trip, and I have three others in the works for the rest, basically between now and September.
Well, it is. It's a perfect time. It's going to be, I think, a beautiful summer, and for people to discover America and the beauty of America, and also of Canada, because you've got some wonderful photos and trips there of Canada. And I have to ask you about this one photo, because I've looked at it. I don't know why it draws me back and forth. And this is the cycle, the peaks at the top of the World Trail in Whistler Mountain. Did you take that picture?
No.
You didn't.
I don't take any of the photos.
You don't take it. I wasn't sure if you took any of them. That's not you. They didn't.
National Geographic has been hiring photographers since 1888 to take amazing photos. And some of the most famous photographers of all time. They have a photo archive that runs into millions and millions of photos. So they have so much choice for these books to pick out the photos. So my photos will run in very specialized books for National Geographic. Like we did one a couple years ago on traveling to trace your roots. And half of my family came from Germany long, long, long ago, the 1850s. And they sent me to Germany to trace my roots there. And they used the photographs that I took of my great-grandmother's house and things like that. That was a very specialized assignment, but most of the time they dig deep into their photo archives for these books.
Well, and of course they have this amazing collection. But that, it's funny, I look at that one, I've looked at it over and over, and I keep imagining, how could somebody ride a bicycle on those peaks? And it's a fascinating, just to open that to that page, I love it. Now, you know, isn't it a beautiful photo?
Yeah, I think it's, I would guess that it was taken by GoPro strapped to the helmet. Whoa. That's my thought.
But, wow, yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, you know, as I said, there are so many places, but I wanted to just start with one thing that it was so funny after I read the intro to the book, and I've had sort of in the back of my head that one of the wonderful road trips is the one that you mentioned, the very first one, and it would make a wonderful film. I love the title, Jackson, Crocker, and Bud. I think, wouldn't that make a wonderful movie?
Yes, it would.
I had no idea that the first road trip was done in 1903. It's I love all these little things that I learned from your books.
I'm surprised someone hasn't done it. There's a 1-hour documentary on it that's, I think, a PBS American Experience that I watched to basically how I found out about that road trip. Because I wanted to think, well, you know, there had to be a first road trip somewhere. Either it's recorded or it's not recorded. And I found out about this guy. It's an incredible story about this doctor from Vermont who invested in Klondike gold mines and took a trip to the Klondike to check out his diggings and then stopped in San Francisco on the way home and went to a gentleman's club down on Market Street and heard this next table over talking about this newfangled invention called the automobile. The fact that it would never replace the horse or the train, because how could you drive it overland? And the guy plunks down a bet, $50, and says, I bet you I can do it. He had never driven a car in his life. He did not own one. He went down the street, bought a car from a local dealer, hired a mechanic to drive with him, and then bought a dog to accompany them, got a pet dog, and they drove across country over 70 days, the first trip from San Francisco to New York City. And it's an incredible story that someone really should make into a feature film.
They really should. And if someone had ever asked, you know, as a trivia question, where was the first road trip, where did it start? You would assume that would have started in New York City and gone, you know, gone west. But the fact that it started in San Francisco and went east, I thought was so amazing. And it stuck with me from the, you know, very first time I read that intro. I thought, I thought it was so clever of you to bring this up. And it sort of sets the whole tone of, wow, you know, since 1903, people have been on the road and discovering all these things. And you can tell us about some of your favorite places. One of mine, I know that I was really thrilled to see the Amargosa Opera in Death Valley. I thought, isn't that an amazing place?
It's a funky little town. It's I've driven through there a couple times and stopped and taken a look at the opera house, but I've never been there when they were actually having a play. But just the fact that someone would build an opera house in the middle of the Mojave Desert near Death Valley. It was Gold Rush Day, so admittedly there were a lot more people, but it just blows me away that if you've ever been to Death Valley and gone to the old Gold Rush towns around there, that people survived in 120-degree temperature without any kind of air conditioning.
I know.
And entertained themselves at night with things like opera. It just is incredible to think about that. This was 120 years ago, right? And up, really up through the 1920s. And then it kind of, the gold ran out and it got too hot and these places became ghost towns. But it's amazing little things. There's another place outside of Death Valley where there's a house that's completely made of bottles, of these green bottles that this pioneer who stayed when the gold ran out, he stayed and started collecting bottles that people had thrown away, wine bottles, whiskey bottles, whatever, and built a whole house out of bottles. And that's another place, a quirky place that's around Death Valley.
It's one trip after another that I just love. Quite a few. You know, as I said, I haven't been as much around America as I should have been, and I now want to go. I want to just get on the road and go. Just tell us. You can tell us some of your favorite places and give us some suggestions. I like how you have places to eat, places to stay, all sort of they're done their little box inserts so that people can look on those right away and get some idea of how to plan their travels.
Yeah, I have a lot of favorite places, and my next trip is going back to one of them, which is Southern Utah. I'm planning a family car camping trip in Southern Utah. Probably, well, I'd like to rent an RV if I can still get one. They're getting really popular now. Basically start in St. George and then go through five national parks over to Moab. Zion, Bryce, Capitol Reef, Arches, and Canyonlands National Parks. And over a week-long road trip in Southern Utah. So, Southern Utah is a place I've been going to since I was a kid. On family vacations, I worked two colleges of summer in Las Vegas, and on my days off, I used to go car camping in the national parks of Southern Utah and Northern Arizona. And I've had my own kids up there, and this is a return trip. Haven't been there in about a decade now, and I want to go back. And so Southern Utah has always been special to me. But I've discovered new places along the way of researching these books, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, the Adirondacks in upstate New York, the Florida Keys, which I had been to before, but only Key West. And I'm not a big party guy, so Key West really didn't impress me. But when I went back to the Florida Keys for this book, for the road trip book, I went to places I had not been to before and discovered a whole different side of the Keys. Key Largo as an island, which I fell in love with, a little resort called the Kona Kai on the Florida Bayside, which is the kind of place that probably existed back in the 20s and 30s when the Keys first became a tourist destination. A nice little resort that's really like something from the past. You can go down to the beach there, jump in a kayak. I went out with my wife one morning into the mangroves, and we come across this very large creature in front of us in the middle of the mangroves that comes up out of the water to look at us. And it's what I thought was an alligator, but turns out to be an American crocodile, which is a very rare species. And my wife and I had totally opposite reactions. We had separate single kayaks. I immediately paddled towards the giant reptile because I wanted to get a better look at it.
Uh-huh.
My wife turned around and started going the opposite direction as fast as she could. And then the croc went underwater, and I suddenly thought, it's bigger than my kayak. I don't know where it is. I should probably get out of here. And that's what I did. The other side of Key Largo is John Pennycamp Reef Coral State Park, which is the best place to scuba or snorkel off of the American mainland. This is also in Key Largo. You've got the Dry Tortugas and Fort Jefferson down there for American history. And at the very top, Biscayne Bay National Park, one of America's newest national parks, really an underused resource where you can see the lights of downtown Miami at night from this place down in Biscayne Bay that's totally unspoiled. Southern Florida is overcrowded in places and crazy in places, but it's also got raw and unencumbered nature that you don't expect to find.
Well, I think one of the things that your books do, they open up ideas so that you're not just obsessed with going to Yosemite, which is a terrible place to go in the summertime. I'm telling you, I would never go there again in the summertime. It's too crowded. I mean, it's crazy. But there are so many places that are underutilized and that opening, that freedom. And as you say, sometimes you hit an area that it's like, it's back in time. It's not just that you're in nature. You're back in nature that, makes you feel like, wow, I'm back in time. I'm away. Actually, I'm away from the pandemic. I'm away from the news. I'm away from television. And this is really fun.
Yeah, I would also suggest to people, we're already through the spring. But in the places that are crowded can be very, very uncrowded in the fall or the winter. My last trip to Yosemite was last December to write a special issue of National Geographic magazine just on Yosemite. And I was there in the snow, and it was exceedingly uncrowded, I better tell you.
Well, that's actually the perfect time. Any time in the late fall, early spring, when before the crowds get there, because once
and I was in the Adirondacks. It was the last trip that I did for the road trip book, and I was there in the fall, actually in early October. And everyone told me this is the best time to come here, because if you come here in the summer, there's bumper to bumper traffic. There's like 10 million people come from Philly, New York, and Boston. You don't want to be in the Adirondacks in the summer. But in early October, it was refreshingly empty, most of the places there.
You can head, if you want a place which just doesn't get a lot of tourists. I know the Michigan's Upper Peninsula. I'm not sure if they'll be happy that I say, well, some of them, my relatives who own stores will be happy if I send tourists up to the Upper Peninsula. On the other hand,
That was a place that I was thinking about mentioning. There in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and Michigan's Upper Peninsula, there's more wilderness left there than any other place in the Midwest. And another place is actually, you know, North and South Dakota, between Teddy Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota and the Badlands and Black Hills of South Dakota, you have an incredible wilderness right in the middle of the Great Plains. That, you know, Mount Rushmore is crowded, but you go other places and it's not, you know, and Deadwood is crowded now because of the TV show, but, you know, you go down to Custer State Park in the Black Hills, and it's like a national park, even though it's a state park, and it's big. It's got a lot of wildlife, including bison herds, and it's got hiking trails where you can get off and not see another person all day. You got to look for these places here and there. Even in the Northeast, you know, places in the White Mountains and the Green Mountains in Vermont and New Hampshire, up in Backwoods, Maine, you know. Hopefully these books bring out a lot of these kind of not-so-obvious places where people can go to get away from the crowds.
That's what I would use this for. All of you people out there who get these books, go through them and then say, you know, where I want to go and try to find these places. One, because those places appreciate tourists more. I know in Upper Michigan, you know, as a Youper, we don't have a lot of tourists, but we love when they come and spend money in the summer because it's really the only time. And like in Chassel, Michigan, they have a wonderful, wonderful strawberry festival. You can check all of these things out. But by looking at Joe's books, you really get an idea of places and things that you probably never thought of. And I love like collecting pictures of things, like for example, I know some people who love anything to do with Coke, and so you can go to the biggest Coke can in the world, or you can do, you know, there's all sorts of these little things that make your travel interesting and make it memorable if you're traveling with children. I think it's so wonderful when you take a child and you take them to a place that and have their photo there, and then 20 years later, they say, I was there, and they want to go take their children then. And so it's a way to sort of share the joy through the generations.
Yeah, I was just very recently looking through some old family photo albums and came across some old black and white, I'm sure they were like Kodak Brownie pictures of me with my dad on my first trip to Yosemite and my first trip to the Grand Canyon. So you're right. They're just incredible memories. And I'm always looking for quirky roadside stuff, without a doubt. And America's full of that kind of stuff. Some of it famous and some of it not. You know, if you drive Route 66 between Chicago and L.A., it takes you down some old U.S. highways across some incredible old quirky things like the Cadillac Ranch and the Texas Panhandle, which is a more modern thing. It's an art installation with half-buried Cadillacs painted various colors. And then you come across these kind of giant roadside robots from the 1950s and these old, you know, pink hotels, pink painted hotels and flamingo style hotels along the roadside and New Mexico and places like that. So it's there's a whole actually genre of architecture that's named after American roadside things that were invented to get people to take their car on vacations.
Now, what are some of the things that I'm sure you've, over the years, you've had problems along the way, and what do you suggest for people? How should they prepare for a road trip?
Well, I think start out by going someplace close to home. That's what I did. I went camping in the mountains of Southern California last week with my new camping equipment, piled everything in the back of my SUV and took it up there. And then after that, I'm doing a more ambitious trip, the one to southern Utah, and then maybe after that to Colorado or to Oregon and Washington State. So start small and then build up and try to find out what your comfort zone is. But always remember that if it's your own vehicle, you control your environment. And unlike an airplane or a hotel or a train or a bus or even a cruise ship, you control what's going on in that car, how safe it is in terms of, you know, the coronavirus and everything. And so, yeah, I think this is a great start small and then spread out.
And the best thing, I mean, nobody wants to be on an airplane right now or on a crowded train or any. The car is perfect. You don't even have to wear a mask in the car. You can open the windows and breathe fresh air when you go to some of these places. It's you forget. You know, when you live like in a town or like even I live in Clearwater. And lately, the past, I don't know, month or 2 months, I've wanted to see the stars. I've just wanted to see stars because you don't really see stars here. You know, we have the hotel lights. Even when the hotel's empty, the hotel lights are still on and you don't see stars. And I've so wanted to just drive as, you know, somewhere where there's no light so I can see stars again.
I actually have to cut you off because I have another interview.
Okay. Well, again, Joe, it's so great to talk to you. I hope that everyone will get these books, and they are just wonderful. 100 parks, 5,000 ideas. He's got 5,000 ideas for everything, 50 states and road trips. And thank you again so much for being on Joy on Paper, Joe.
Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it. And stay safe out there.
Okay. You do. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, we're going to have a commercial break. And, we'll have a commercial break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, This is Patsy with the Z, and I am back, and I am going to play an interview that I taped with a wonderful author from Texas, and I just enjoyed it so much, and I think you will too. And this is from John Bishop. Okay. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper John Bishop for his new book, Act of Deception, a medical thriller. It's the second in his Doc Brady mystery series. Hi, John. How are you?
Hello, Patsy. Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, I'm always happy to talk to somebody in Houston or from Houston and who makes me feel like I'm back in Houston when I am reading your books. It's just wonderful because you have a way to really bring Houston to life, and I think anybody who's ever been to Houston or lived there will really appreciate the way that you write about the city. You make it part of your books.
Well, I appreciate that. I try.
Well,
bring it to life, especially the restaurants.
I think for all of us, I can tell you, I have not had good barbecue since I left Houston. I don't know. They try here, and every once in a while they'll open another restaurant here, and they'll say something like Texas style barbecue, and I think, oh gosh,
never.
Oh, to be on Westheimer.
Just, oh my, isn't that the truth?
I mean, we ate out so much when we were there because there were so many good restaurants. I mean, you could just go down Westheimer and we'll stop here tonight. one after another. It's just unbelievable. Wow. Well, this is exciting. You know, we talked, it wasn't too long ago, we talked about your first book, Active Murder. And now we've got the second book. You know, one of the things that why I so enjoy talking to you is I love when people follow their dream, that they have other careers, they do other things in life, but in the back of their mind, they want to write, or, you know, they just have a need to tell their stories. And here you are now with your second book, Act of Deception, really fascinating. I almost hits too close to home. It was a little hard for me to read this book because.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I've been involved in let's just say lawyers are not my favorite people. So let's talk about the new book because I really love your character, Houston orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Jim Bob Brady. I think you've come out with a character that you'll be able to write about him for many, many years because there's many fascinating stories that and things that you can get him involved in. But let's talk about this new one and the legal troubles that he faces.
Sure, I know. Yeah, he Dr. Brady is a specialist in the hip and knee replacement, and he replaces the knee on a country farmer from down in Brazoria County, and through a various weird set of circumstances, the knee gets infected, and the man loses his leg above the knee, which is not something you'd expect after having a knee replacement. And so Brady gets sued, and so the whole novel is about lawyers and patients, and is this a terrible complication, and did he cause this problem, or is there something else going on, and therefore, could it be an act of deception somehow?
And of course,
that's how it comes about.
And of course, it comes in with a lawyer. And I will say,
we've all had experiences with lawyers. You know?
Donovan Shaw is. I hate, but he did remind me of several Houston lawyers with whom I dealt. I get sort of like a little bit antsy when I start talking about lawyers, and particularly lawyers in Houston. So tell us about how you came out with Donovan Shaw, and have you had an experience with somebody like that?
Well, this all came about because, you know, when you were practicing orthopedic surgery back in the 90s, it was the heyday of medical malpractice lawsuits. And so if you hadn't been sued, you weren't operating on anybody. It was like a war. And so I got sued over some negligent stuff, which, of course, was crap, in my opinion. And so I built up that that whole animosity over the course of 6 months or a year, and then I wrote about it while it was fresh on my mind. So there's some anger maybe seeping out between the lines that you couldn't tell.
I noticed that because I have to tell you that I have been working on a novel. But I don't dare finish it. Well, I'm hoping, I guess they all have to die because they'll sue me. Because it's a novel about a client who writes a film about killing the lawyers who she was involved with. And then the lawyers recognize themselves in the movie, and then they want to sue her. And it's a lot of lawsuits
going on. That sounds fun.
Mostly it was chapters that I have fun with are killing the lawyers, and that
Shakespeare said it first.
Exactly, and so I get stuck on those ones, and I like there were a lot of lawyers in that law firm, and I can go through all of them, and I the ways that I have found to murder them are quite intriguing, and I do expect one day I'm going to publish it when I feel that I'm old enough that I don't care if they sue me because they recognize themselves.
Oh, that's too funny.
Oh, it will be set in Houston. And I think I'm going to follow your example. I'm going to use all the restaurants. As a matter of fact, maybe I'm going to move the murders to the restaurants. That would be really nice. You know, you inspire
me. Chase of the Godfather, exactly.
Right. You inspire me. John Bishop, you are inspiring.
You're kind.
I hope that you inspire all the people out there you know, I love when I go to meetings and I'm go to events and people say, "Oh, I want to write a book, but I don't know how to start." And I just say, "Like, start, you know, do
yeah.
it."
You just sit down there and start typing and see where it goes.
That's right. And even if you don't type, you can start writing it. I know people who have written out their books on yellow legal pad. Oh, I'm talking about lawyers.
Well, you know, yeah, that's all the people that use those pads.
That's
you know.
It. You can start that way. And if even if you can't type, you can get somebody in your family to type, right?
That's right. Or you can put it on tape and get somebody to type it.
That's
for
it. And
all kinds of options.
Exactly. But you have to come out with some really great characters. And you, with your characters, Jim Bob Brady is great. His wife, you've really, you know, developed a nice relationship there with Mary Louise. I like her. And then, of course, let's talk about JJ. Because now JJ is playing a very important role here as a investigator.
Yes, that's exactly right. He's got a firm. He started in college with his college roommate, and he's kind of developing into quite the little investigator. And boy, you talk about finding all kinds of stuff when he found out that stuff about Dom Davis. That was one of my favorites. Dom, the fellow with the champagne glass etched in his front tooth.
well, you know, I really like JJ. I think that again, it's wonderful when you come up with characters that readers can remember, and I think you know that's part of the goal when you're going to write a series that you want people that even when it comes down to the names that they're memorable and that when people will hear you know Jim Bob Brady they'll know you know that orthopedic surgeon and with a son named JJ and I think that you've done the right thing in building this series.
Well, thank you. I've got some I've got more books there in the wing, so hopefully you know if these two do pretty well there's another one that's already written and ready to go. Well, in fact, it's coming out September 10th. That's right. I think I told you that.
Yeah.
Well, called Act of Revenge.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I think maybe you're already on my calendar because I was looking forward to, you know, this is what I like. Once you find that joy on paper, once you just let your characters, in some ways, don't you feel like your characters are taking over your life? They know what they want to do?
Totally. And it's like after a while, you know, you just say, like, okay, what do you want to do? And they just keep doing stuff. You don't have to do much except just use the keyboard.
That's it. That's the exciting. That's what I talk to people about. There is such a joy letting these characters just sort of bubble up in your mind and then take over, and you run with them and have fun.
You know, you do, and basically it's important to get it all down. It may not sound perfect, and it may not sound grammatically correct, but that's why they have editors. That's why they have rewrites. I mean, the important thing is to get the ideas down on paper, get some characters on paper, and see what happens with them.
That's it. And, of course, now of course, we're facing this terrible pandemic time here where you can't really get out too much and do book signings and go to events. But still, there are many ways that you can promote your books. And I think that it is wonderful to have a series, because so often what happens is, you're writing, you might be writing, and I have a couple of authors who have, their first books came out, second books came out, third books came out, and they did well. They didn't go crazy with their sales, but they were building up this audience, and you gradually start building up your audience and your fan base. And it's important that as you go along, as you write, that you keep. I hope that you're doing email lists. I hope that you're working on your fan base, because at some point, and one particular author I know, she was like about on her sixth book, and suddenly she realized, gee, I have a lot of people writing to me. I have a lot of people who are starting to talk about me. And she worked on that and did more promotion, newsletters, and got really fans encouraging their friends to start reading the books. And this is one of the things that you can do. Sometimes it's like a community too, that people who are involved in the medical business, nurses, doctors, technicians, hospitals, you start working with them to build your fan base, and then it can be really quite amazing how your books can take off. But you have to work on it. This is something that you have to work on yourself, because even if you publish by the biggest publishers in the world, they don't do that anymore. Big publishers really give very little time to promotion. It's just not the thing anymore. So it's up to the authors to do that. And I don't know if you've been working on that. Have you been?
Well, yeah, I've been working it with Anna Seca from.
Uh huh. Yeah, she's.
I think you know Anna.
Yeah,
she's a publisher.
She's a publisher.
Helped me a great.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, she's
Anna is wonderful.
She's done a lot of nice things for me, and also my wife has gotten in this constant contact thing, making lists of people and returning emails, and so that's been very helpful as well. So.
Well, that's a way to do it, but it's amazing how, just sometimes a simple, like. I'm talking even your medical organizations, the different medical organizations that you belong to. Reach out to them. Do articles about something else in their magazines. And then at the same time, you can promote your books. Sometimes you might write an article about knee surgery, okay? Not a technical one, but a sort of a general one. You might do for just a popular magazine, something about how to take care of yourself after a knee surgery, and then at the bottom of it, you say the author's name, and he wrote a novel, like blah blah blah. There are many ways to do this. But you have to take on that part. Really, of course, you're probably rich enough to hire people to do that. But you have to. You have to take. I remember. I don't know. You're not. Do you live in River Oaks?
Well, I did at one time.
So okay. Well, you then. I'm telling you, hire the right people to analyze it and reach out beyond the ordinary, not just Facebook or Instagram. That really is getting old, and it's not working. What you have to do is build your own fan base. And for example, I love medical books, anything medical. Robin Cook was one of, when I started reading, you know, when he came out with Coma and after that and every other book that he ever wrote, I love medical mysteries. I love medical mysteries. And so people, you know, I think it's partly if I worked when I was a candy striper when I was a girl in high school. And once you've worked in a hospital, you always are sort of interested, and you can visualize things, you know, so well. And you like reading medical books. So you have to reach out to your community of medical people. You know, have signings at hospitals, give books away at hospitals, do things, well, once we get rid of this pandemic thing. But reach out to your organizations and really start promoting yourself and your books. Because
That's great advice. You
will be amazed at, as I said, it builds up. It's not necessarily book one and two. It might be suddenly you start seeing this turnaround at book five. You say, well, gee, when people start talking about you to their friends, that's when you start building your fan base. And that's how you do it. So there are lots of ways. I mean, if I was you and I had, you know, a little bit of the money that I'm sure you have somewhere stucked away because of orthopedic surgeons. Well, you know, nowadays, of course, you know, they're holding down the doctor's fees and everything. But you were at the heyday, too, I think.
Yeah, I'm older, so I was in the era when you sent an insurance company a bill and they paid you.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm saying is there are ways that you have to do it. Actually, reach out to ordinary magazines, sort of the general kind of magazines that people read, you know, Family Life and those kind of ones. Write a serious article about something to do with, you know, orthopedic recovery, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom, you talk about how you are also a novelist. They always do that little bio of the author.
Sure.
You build yourself up as an authority, and the next thing you know, people are reading your, not just your medical, not, you know, articles, but your actual novels, which is what you want them to do, right?
Yeah, in the first place. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot more. It's a lot more individual work at it these days than it used to be.
Oh yeah, no, it has to be. It, even for the biggest authors. I remember one time I was talking to Mary Higgins Clark, and I miss her very much. But she was telling me how, in the heyday when she started off, and she was, you know, really selling like a crazy amount of books, they would send her out on a book tour, and they would send a handler with her, somebody to take care of everything, somebody who she'd fly first class. The handler would take care of everything. She wouldn't have to do a thing. She'd stay in the best hotels, every limousines, you know, from the airport to the hotel, blah, blah. And this was, you know, when the publishers were out there and really giving a lot to their, you know, to their authors. But by the end here, even now, even the most famous authors, they're given, their tickets are paid, you know, their hotel bills are paid and their airline tickets are paid, and they're given per diem for food. But they're responsible. They don't have a handler taking them. They're responsible. They have to fly from city to city and find their way to the bookstore where they're going to be giving the lecture, or the college where they're going to be doing a speech. They don't have anybody sending them, you know, taking care of them. So it's up to the authors. And that's why you have to be clever and think of new ways. And as I said, Facebook and those really don't work. People waste a lot of time on that kind of stuff. What you want to do is the smart kind of marketing. And if I were you, because I think you have enormous potential here. You know, I was just talking to somebody who actually his book has been turned into a film. But all of this comes, it takes time, and you're young enough so that you have plenty of time, because I just talked to a 97-year-old woman who wrote a book about cybercrime. If a 97-year-old woman can write a brilliant book about cybercrime, you know, you can keep you can keep going on here for many, many years. And, you can have many, many Doc Brady mysteries. And at they're never interested in taking this, like, onto a television series or anything until you have, like, 14, 15 books. So you're looking for a long, long run here. But if you do two a year, it's not that long. And you have the right characters. That's the important thing. You have your three main characters and some other ones around that make the books interesting. So I just want to tell you, I think you're terrific. I'm really happy that to see that you're prolific also. And so The Act of Deception is available, it's what, June 10th, right?
June 10th. I guess that's tomorrow.
June 10th. And yeah, that's why, because I don't have a program on Wednesday, that's why you're on today. And everybody, it's... You can start with Act of Deception, and once you read Act of Deception, you're going to want to go back and read Act of Murder. And that's one, that's the great thing about series. People will, you know, people might pick up book eight, and then they'll go back to the beginning, and then you have lots of sales. And, well, you know, that's the way it works. So I
great just, advice. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. John Bishop, for being on Joy on Paper today, because I think you are a joy. I think you're great. I love being taken back to wonderful, wonderful Houston and to all of the wonderful restaurants there. You really make it come alive. So, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, John.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Take care.
Okay, and you'll be back in September, right?
I'll be here.
Okay.
Or there.
Okay. Hey,
all
who
right,
knows?
Thanks.
You could actually come over here to Florida if you need a vacation. Okay.
All right. Sounds okay. Perfect.
Okay. Well, I am running out of time, and I just want to say, again, thank you so much. I won't give my whole spiel. What I will do, let's end it, Ed. Let's end it with the poem from Jim Lamb. And next week I will add more from him because it is a poem about having some joy on paper. So thank you, Jim Lamb, for that. And then play out my music after the poem. Okay, here we go. Jim Lamb.
Squiggles on Paper. By J.S. Lamb. Words and numbers on a page, writ in love or burning rage, gurgling, burgling through our brains, happy, sad, pleasure, pain. Feelings slide through pencils, pens, rhyming, chiming now and then. Who brings these squiggles to our eyes? Friends with nimble lows and highs.